announcements. There are no announcements. Tonight, on our agenda, we are going to be discussing a model to measure student performance. And with that, I'll hand it over to Art.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy tonight to be able to share with you the idea of value-added assessment as a means of, I believe, much more accurately measuring student growth than we currently do under the current system. As you recall, the way the Wisconsin Knowledge and Concepts exam works is we compare this year's fourth graders to last year's fourth graders, so we're not comparing the same children. This is a methodology that allows us to track longitudinally the growth of students over time and to utilize that data to really look at how successful we're being at all levels of our organization. So I'm very pleased tonight to have the people from the Value Added Research Center at the university here. And I will turn it over to Kirk Kiefer, our newly recommended Chief Information Officer, who has been working on this project now for a long time for us. And I will turn it over to him and let him take it. So, Kirk.
Thank you, Art. I think that's on, isn't it? Okay. Thanks, Art. This really is a project that has a very long history in terms of its intent. Many years ago, when the state only tested in grades 4, 8, and 10, we simply had, as Art said, the cohort-to-cohort kind of comparison, not the same children over time. In that period of time, back in 1995, 96, 97, we made a decision to implement some off-grade testing in reading and math in grades 5, 6, and 7 so that we would have some of that kind of growth. At that point, we did some very crude kinds of analyses to look at change over time. What this system takes us to is a much more sophisticated one. However, it's definitely understandable, and that's what Dr. Meyer and his team will, I think, stress for you. While they're very talented, very skilled, very sophisticated in their analyses, they can also make them very understandable, which I'm really pleased with. So we had a very crude concept of this. Now, with No Child Left Behind, of course, requiring testing in reading and math in grades 3 through 8 and 10, we have this system built, basically waiting to be built. In that respect, we are collaborating with the Department of Public Instruction on another project called a Longitudinal Data Systems Grant. I believe is that an NSF-funded grant? I think it is, an NSF-funded grant, with one of the outcomes of that project to be the creation of a value-added system. They're looking to develop that system using some real data, and Madison is going to be one of the districts that will be used to create that system. So we're on track. This is a model that, as Dr. Meyer will explain, is something that's been developed at other school districts. He will talk about, I'm sure, about Milwaukee and his experience with Milwaukee and their 6+ years now that they've been developing their system. It's quite impressive in terms of what it does. And I think one of the important things to stress with this new system is the equity that it brings to accountability. You look at every child from where they start, and you control for various factors that can confound effects: poverty, mobility, parent education, and other things that can confound effects in terms of what you're seeing from one year to the next. And you're looking for growth over time, and we'll be able to set benchmarks for how much growth we expect to see for a child who may be performing minimally at the basic level, at the proficient level, and even at advanced. So we're looking for this new system to provide us not only this year-to-year thing in terms of, well, how many kids were proficient this year, but now how much growth is occurring and what can we attribute that to in terms of the school where those children attend. So that's the system that we're working toward. We're very excited about the equity that it can bring to the accountability system, if you will, And we're incredibly excited to be partnering with this group of professionals. They are highly skilled in this area. We are very fortunate to be in a community where we have them to work with. And just as my show of partnership, of course, you see today I wore the right colors. So, but I'm sincere when I say that. These folks are wonderful to work with, and I'm incredibly excited that they're here and willing to work with us. So,
just one other comment before we turn it over to Rob. Our plan right now is that we will present the annual report in a growth format this fall.
We'll have baseline data this year, just baseline data. Yep.
Is that for then the annual report for last year's based on growth data? Is that what you're saying?
For
the last year's school?
We will be looking at growth between 2004-05 and 2005, 2005-06 and 2006-07, these years passed too fast.
Right. Terrific.
So that's the notion. It's to look at from one year to the next. And there are some very complicated issues that get into the mix, but Rob and his team have addressed many of those things, and I think it's truly where we want to head.
Okay.
Where we want to head.
So go ahead, Kurt.
Okay, I want to turn this over to Dr. Meyer, who will introduce his team. It's a formidable team. I'm again just incredibly impressed with the abilities that they bring to something like this. Rob will give them. He'll ask them to introduce themselves. He'll give a little presentation, and then we'll open it up for questions that you might have. Okay. All right. With that, Rob.
Why don't you start?
Sure. My name is Mike Christian. I'm an assistant scientist with the Value Added Research Center at Wisconsin Center for Education Statistics. I have a PhD in economics from the University of Michigan, and I've worked at VARC for about a year now.
My name is Ernie Morgan. I'm an associate researcher with VARC. I have a master's in economics. I've been with VARC for 2 years, and I specialize in working with districts and SEAs and data. Mm-hmm.
My name is Yue Hu. I just got my PhD in economics from Syracuse University, and my dissertation is all about school finance. So I'm glad we have this opportunity to serve Madison Metropolitan School District.
Yeah. My name is Emily Chen. I got my master's degree in economics from University of Virginia. Currently, I'm still in the process of pursuing my PhD degree, and my field is concentrated on the educational research. So it's really being an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, great. We do have a really good team. We started working on value-added models in the very academic way with me and two graduate students 10 years ago. And it's grown into something that we've almost surprised ourselves that this is actually really useful. This is more than just intellectually interesting. This is a tool that has policy value. After we worked with Milwaukee starting about 10 years ago, and I should credit the Joyce Foundation with and Helen Bader Foundation with funding our start. And after demoing the model and the way of thinking, they said, "Well, this is really great. Would you help us build it?" I thought, well, that's an interesting thing. And to some degree, our lives have been changed as researchers because it gave us an opportunity to work very, very closely with a real district. And it turns out that working with real districts is way, way interesting. It's rewarding in many ways because you certainly have a satisfaction that you're trying to help. But lots of interesting puzzles arise in the real world that maybe you don't always imagine just sitting in the laboratory setting. So it's been very interesting. I always say in any district we ever work with that we get way more out of it working with the district than we provide. So I'm very appreciative to Kurt and to Art that they've talked with us over the last couple of years about how Madison might participate and make use of our thoughts, and it's been great. We had a meeting just in February that Art and Kurt, in fact, you had a very large contingent of your leadership at the meeting. Chicago Public Schools attended, Milwaukee Public Schools, Minneapolis Public Schools, and it was just sort of a Midwest enclave of people trying to see whether data can be used to learn how to make their school systems better. And I think it was both interesting from the ideas, but also from the chance for real school people to talk and interchange ideas. if you want to be having an opportunity to talk about Madison's contribution, made a very important contribution. I think Kurt and his staff have built a data system that is really something that even the large districts with huge research staffs can learn from. So I think Madison can contribute a lot to thinking about how to use data, and really are quite far along on this. It was nice to see that. So we've been working on value-added models. Value-added models are their origin is in research, where in a research project you're trying to figure out what works. And so you often will be looking and trying to figure out whether reducing class size works, whether a certain math program is effective. In some sense, what value added is, the idea that what you're looking at in terms of what works is the school. That, you know, that's your program, so that you can provide feedback to the schools on whether they're doing a good job in math or reading at different grades. And then with the additional assistance you can provide to help make them better. Let's see. What is value added? The idea, as I've just said, is to measure the performance. Some might use the word productivity with respect to test scores. We focus on, as Kurt mentioned, growth for the same kinds of students. We want to be looking at the growth in student achievement from fourth to fifth, fifth to sixth, sixth and seventh, and so on, for the same group of students, rather than looking at test scores for fourth graders and how they change over time. If we get to it later, if not, you can look at it. There's a slide in our presentation based on NAEP data, and the contrast in terms of what you know about what's going on when you look just at attainment and see that changing over time, whereas whether you're looking at growth. And you can get very, very different ideas about what's going on when you look at growth, as opposed to if you're just looking at attainment. Let's go on to the next one, Ernie. So that leads to this slide. Why value added? Why not average attainment? Or why not the proficiency rate? Why not some of the indicators that we're so used to from now, No Child Left Behind? Well, we need some criteria to think about how we would answer that. And we're going to answer it that value added is the thing we want to look at if what we're interested in is looking indicators that can be useful for policy purposes. But let's go on to the next one, Ernie. Three criteria. The first one would be validity. Are the school productivity indicators measured in terms of outcomes valued by students and society? Now, to some degree, this one's a wash with respect to No Child Left Behind attainment type indicators versus value added, because we're limited to using the same kinds of test scores. But we need to be reminded that our value-added indicators or our attainment indicators are only as valuable to us as we believe that the test scores are capturing the things that we're interested in. So we know that the state test scores are in grades 3 to 8, and then 10th grade in the state. So we have state test score data where we're going to be able to look at those particular grades. We aren't able to use that data then for high school or for K through 2. Kurt's got another project that we're working with where we're thinking about trying to use some other indicators, some of the early child indicators. But at the moment, we're talking largely about using the state tests. A second criteria is statistical. Are the indicators accurate in the sense of measuring true school productivity? Technical terms, you might ask, are these indicators unbiased or are they biased? Are they giving you the right answer? And the third one is behavioral. Are the indicators non-corruptible? You can have incentive systems where it gives practitioners an incentive to do the wrong thing. I mean, not that they would act on that. But what is, if you're measuring, in some sense, the productivity of the system based on attainment, one of the problems with that is one way to have higher attainment is to worry about who goes to your school. And so in some schools, particularly in school systems where there's choice opportunities, you can spend a lot of your time being interested in recruiting the kinds of kids that will give you higher test scores than worrying about your contribution to making those test scores, which is the value-added part. Next. So sometimes you need a good set of arguments about why attainment's a problem. So I spent a long time thinking about that because it's important to be able to get this right, because there's such inertia towards using attainment indicators. To some degree, the feds contribute to that because No Child Left Behind singles out attainment-type indicators like percent proficient, although parenthetically I remark that a lot of the new thinking about reauthorization of No Child Left Behind is centered around the kinds of indicators that we're thinking about, whether they be called growth indicators or value added. So there's an awareness that now as these indicators, as these accountability standards are going to start to constrain, to really identify schools as high performing or low performing, maybe it's time to get it right and be measuring the performance of schools correctly. So what are the problems with attainment indicators? Well, one is, it's fairly well known, teachers certainly know this, an eighth grade test score is mostly determined by the seventh grade test score. In other words, by things that happened prior to that teacher having a chance to work with eighth grade students. Even if a teacher does a tremendous job of adding growth, where the student ends up at eighth grade is going to be a lot determined by their starting point. So the first thing that value added does is it avoids that problem. Sometimes people use the metaphor of it evens the race. By controlling for starting point and looking at growth, districts where classrooms where teachers may be working with kids that are way behind are going to be judged on what they add, and hence the name value added, what they add rather than being held accountable for where they end up. It's very nice, it's very important to be able to distinguish between the two things, where students start out and where they end up, and be sure that in terms of fairness, we're looking at what the teacher or a group of teachers can do to contribute to that growth. The second thing is it can reflect out-of-date productivity effects from prior grades. The NAEP example illustrates that. If we look at 11th grade, 10th grade test scores, why would they go up or down? Well, they may go up or down because of something that happened in grades K through 3, not something that happened last year. So you may be responding to something that was old news, something that happened 10 years ago when you look at attainment. Student mobility is the third one. In districts like Madison, increasingly Chicago, Milwaukee, there's lots of turnover. Students move in, they leave, they change schools. And if you look at attainment, it's like musical chairs where that's the school they ended up in eighth grade or 10th grade. And if we assign all of that test score and assume that the school was responsible for the growth in achievement, we're getting it wrong because the students, many of them weren't there for perhaps more than a year or two or three. And then the last thing is that when we look at attainment scores, they fail to localize productivity to a unit of schooling that sort of makes sense. When you look at 10th grade test score, is that about 9th and 10th grade? Is it about middle school? Is it about elementary school? Where do you turn to the improvements? If you're turning just to high school, of course you're missing part of the story, because a lot of the reason the test scores are high or low is because of what you did in elementary school and middle school. Achievement accumulates, it builds, it's a slow process, and if you're better at it every year, you produce students who have higher test scores. And of course, that's what value added is designed to do. Why don't we skip this one? I've already talked about some of the distortions that can occur if you focus on attainment. I mentioned creaming. Okay. Now, what is another nice thing that value added does? People know that there's a problem with looking at attainment indicators. And what do they say when the scores are low? Well, it's not our fault, it's the kid's fault. Now, what value added does is it completely eliminates that argument. Here is a chart of actual data from Milwaukee, and what we have here is eighth grade mathematics achievement on the vertical axis and value added on the horizontal axis, and it's just a data plot. Those data points represent schools in Milwaukee, and you'll notice at the lower right hand there's schools B and G and F, and those are schools that in a given year had high value added but are low attainment schools. So how is this happening? These are schools where the students were very, very far behind, but those schools added tremendous value. Now, if those students were able to stay in that school for several years, or in schools like that for, say, 8 years, their test scores would be way, way high. But in one particular year, they don't do it necessarily enough to override the deficit that existed when they started. We have another slide later that shows it in a different way, which is value added against their starting point. But this is, we use this table because Milwaukee finds this a very useful tool. They call this their quadrant analysis. So on the vertical axis, we have something that's a bit like No Child Left Behind. It's attainment focused. And on the other axis, we have value added. So they'd really like you to be in the upper right quadrant, high value added, high attainment. You can get there by being in a high value added school, and you often would be there because you come in with family resources that have meant that you join that school with high test scores. But they're also very interested in that lower right quadrant, and these are the schools that Minneapolis invented the term about a decade ago called beating the odds. These are the schools that take kids that are way far behind and add tremendous value to them. Now, why is this important? This is proof of concept that it can be done. Now, what's another interesting? The upper left-hand corner, and there aren't too many that are in the far upper left, but those would be the schools that would be a high attainment but low value added. Those are the schools that you could say are coasting. They take in students with high value added but aren't adding too many. Now, when Milwaukee first published value added, they went official with their value added system about 6 years ago, and we're in year six. There were a number of schools that came to them and said, I don't get it. We've always had high test scores. Why are we low value added? And the research director there took out the numbers and said, well, here's your problem. You're taking students in with WKC scores of 300, and when they leave, they're at about 310. In other districts, in other schools, when the students are coming in and having test scores at the 300 level, they're leaving with 340, 350. And they said, you know, we've never looked at the data like that. We have kids coming in year after year who have high test scores, and this is a community with more affluent kids. They didn't know. They found it, at first they found it very upsetting to find out that they weren't adding growth. And they thought, well, there must be some problem. I don't understand the data. We have high-achieving kids. It was a different way of thinking to think about this longitudinal growth. And they then worked very hard to think about, whoa, we have to be focusing not just on our kids being high-achieving, but what have we done for them lately? So, those schools weren't even aware. They didn't know kids were... the lower category there are the students that are coming in behind and are in schools that are not having them catch up. Those are the schools that just this past year, Superintendent Andrikopoulos designated as special schools that he was going to provide additional resources for. And so he partnered with the local chapter, with the national NEA, and so they're now called NEA Challenge Schools, and there's additional resources being brought to help those schools do a better job. And so it's an example of where you can use accountability to give schools accountability measures, and you can provide genuine help. You can identify, go ahead.
I do have a question. How often then would in the Milwaukee Public Schools in this circumstance plot this out? Is this a yearly?
They do this yearly.
And Do they typically see the similar pattern? How long would it take to move a school from here to here?
That's a really good question. And we were just down working with the Chicago Public Schools. They said, please, could you put together all your evidence that you have from Milwaukee on success stories? What does it take to get from here to there? And so we're going to do that, and we will share that with you. Some of these schools actually stay there because they're alternative schools that are designed for kids who are far behind. Then they catch up, and then they go back into more of their neighborhood school. So if you were to use kind of No Child Left Behind criteria, they would be eliminated because they would never catch up, because after the students have a year or two of growth, they go back into their neighborhood schools, and another group of students come in. it's a, you know, that's really an important question. And I tell you what it gets to. It gets to the issue, okay, now that we've done a better job of identifying which schools are doing well, which schools aren't doing so well, how can we get them from one category to the next? Yeah. And that's very, very important. We've been building a program with Milwaukee about how do you do that? How do you give them the tools other than just telling them, which is very useful to give them honest information about where they are. How do you give them the tools to get better? And I can talk some more about that. We've got a whole program that's designed because that's where you want to be. This is about starting a conversation about how to get better.
And one more question about the chart. The chart, I'm assuming, that is made visible to the public.
Yes.
The identification of the specific schools only stays within the administration and board, or is that something that is...
The value-added numbers are provided in two ways. One, there's a... three ways. There's a... each school has a school report card, and there we have the value-added scores for that school aggregated over grades. So middle school would be for 6, 7, 8, not separately by grade. What they want is a whole school focus. They're trying to tie it to their school reform efforts. And they also provide additional information, some graphics, that give them a sense of, these are our estimates. They're fragile, they're statistical, they have standard errors, error bands, just like Gallup poll things. And so there's a graphic that shows how certain they are about the evidence. And that was actually an interesting decision, to be honest about the strength of the data. Schools that have a large number of students, as a matter of the mechanics of statistics, tend to have, just like a big sample for a Gallup poll, have smaller error. So there's some small schools, alternative schools, they would have larger error. The second thing is that they provide to the schools and the teachers themselves evidence by grade. They do not provide any evidence at the teacher level, but they do at the grade level. So middle school, that would be then separate value-added estimates by 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade, so that for the purposes of their local school improvement, they can understand where their strengths and weaknesses are. You know, they may find out that they're doing very well in math in 8th grade, but not so well in 6th and 7th grade, and then that allows them to tailor their school improvement plans accordingly.
Rob, a question. If I remember their report correctly, though, their... if you look at an individual school's report, it shows where that school is in comparison to the average growth of the district, right?
That's right.
It doesn't compare this school to that school specifically.
No, that's right. That's right. In fact, so if we were to look at these numbers, being to the right is better on value added, being to the left. And so the only thing that we could add to this table to give the information on the statistical precision would be to add an error bar here, and that would give you the sense of uncertainty. And so that information is published on the web, so it's available for any educator or citizen or whatever who wants to look at the school level. The stuff by grade is available to the educators themselves for the use, but is not generally available. And then this quadrant analysis is also published in the school report card. So that's the coupling of the value added with the attainment, the proficiency.
Does it have the school name on it as it's published publicly?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
The other important point, I think, that goes to, I think, one of the things you were talking about, Ms. Silvera, is the fact that we don't fixate too much on 1 year either. I believe we're looking at trends at a school over time. You want to see change over time, even at the school level. So you're looking for, okay, what has been our 3-year average, our 6-year average, and whatnot.
Right. That's right. And even in the school report card, which they try to keep very clean, not that many numbers, would have the 3 years of data.
And that's why Kurt referred to next year, although we'll show growth for 1 year, we would consider it a baseline.
Yep.
Because you're really going to look ahead 3 to 5 years, what's the trend for that school.
With this type of graph, you have the district average, so we're always going to have half of the schools below the average and half above the average?
Well, that's... No. although sometimes yes. If it turns out that the state assessment system changes, then you often lose the ability to compare. So for instance, in 2005, the fall of 2005, the state went to a new assessment system. So at that point, we had to, we had to sort of stop the history and start fresh in terms of comparisons, because that they did not, the state did not attempt to equate, to calibrate the test scores. But if you're using the same assessment system year after year, and someone like Kurt verifies that he believes the numbers, that that the numbers really mean what they were supposed to mean, then what happens in terms of the value added is you tend to lock in for 1 year, and for technical reasons we often center around zero for the first year. There's other ways of doing it. That's the way we chose to do it in Milwaukee, because they started their value added system when there was only state testing in 4, 8, and 10. And so they had to fill in the other grades with other testing. Now we have the luxury over the last 2 years of having a state assessment system where the tests sort of mean the same thing and are on the same scale from grades 3 through 8. So growth is sort of defined. You can use value added in cases where the pre and post test at different grades aren't in the same units, in which case it's a little trickier. Milwaukee had that slightly trickier situation, but now we're in a situation where the scores are scaled to mean the same thing. So we could say the average school maybe has growth of 30 points, a lower performing school maybe only 15, and a higher performing school 65. Now what happens then is that over time, let's imagine that year after year the schools get better. In terms of the value added points, the data points drift on the scale and shift to the right. And of course that's what you're hoping for. It's not that it wouldn't be informative if the tests were like not equated so they meant the same thing. These relative comparisons are still helpful, but it's way more encouraging to educators if there's an absolute number. Mike, before he came here, worked on the GNP accounts. It's really nice when the unemployment rate or the inflation rate mean the same thing year after year. Otherwise, you don't know what they mean. So we hope for the same thing with respect to test scores and with value-added metrics. And so the hope would be, and perhaps the hope would be as a board, that you'd be actually most interested in the schools at the bottom pushing up. You might not just be neutral about which schools you want to get better. You'd be probably delighted to have all the schools get better. But as Mr. Andrikopoulos in Milwaukee has focused, he's very interested in bringing up the bottom. Again, to serve that equity purpose. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's go on to the next one, Ernie. Okay. We wanted to at least show you that we remember our statistical model building. So here we have.
Remember, I did say no black box.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So we have two ways of presenting it. One is with the equations that we sometimes like, because that's like a recipe for our computer programmers. But we have an evaluated model is post-test and pre-test, Y1 and Y0. And that could be for any grade, 3rd to 4th, 4th to 5th. And then we also have student characteristics in the model. So what we can do by including student characteristics in the model is we can make comparisons that over time that are neutral with respect to the composition of the students going to your school. And here's an interesting issue that arises. When you put in the model student characteristics, the data tells you then are associated with student achievement growth, they may be race and ethnicity variables. They may be income variables. And so it's very important to know and understand what it is we're doing when we put those variables in the model. When we put low income variable in, which could be measured by, say, free lunch. What we would typically get in a data set from any district is a negative coefficient. If you're low income, if your family is bringing lower resources to you, your student achievement growth is going to be less. What Milwaukee has done, because we've talked with them about the equity information that's contained in these models, is they actually have made policy and the board has thought about some of these things with respect to those actually coefficients. What those coefficients say is, at this point in time, how much less did a low-income student learn in the Milwaukee Public Schools or in the Madison Public Schools? And so it can become then a focus of board policy, of superintendent policy, to set goals for whether you'd like that coefficient to go down. You'd like to say, whoa, in this district, if you're poor, you don't learn as much as other kids. Why is that? Can we fix that? Can we make that less? Can we reduce, can we attack, in some sense here, the student achievement gap? So the value-added tool not only can be used to rate the performance of schools, but it can be used as a very pure tool for identifying how a district's doing with respect to gap closing. And that's one of the tools that I know Milwaukee is very, very interested, because of course they have to be and are extremely committed to gap closing, to eliminating achievement gaps. And so that's one of the things that they look at. And they would actually then look at that over time. Are we making progress with respect to gap closing? At one point, we actually called the indicator associated with that the equity-oriented value-added indicator. Now I think we tend to call it gap closing. So, what we note here is that the value-added effect, as we would go down to the classroom level, consists of what's done in the classroom, but also acknowledging the role of the school and the role of of the district. We build up associated evaluation tools that would then take measures of what teachers are doing, what principals are doing, the decisions they make, and then we would relate those to these value-added measures of productivity to then proceed into the second thing I really talked to you about, is can we figure out how to get better? Can we exploit information about what's going on in Madison and perhaps Madison's partners, Milwaukee, Chicago, Minneapolis, and can we learn about how to get better? And so part of the excitement, I think, that Art felt when he was meeting with his colleagues from these other districts is, whoa, we can learn from each other if we compare notes on what's being done with respect to math curriculum, reading curriculum, the use of coaches and other reading first, all the other kinds of things that we talk about. Okay, next slide, Ernie. Okay. We could certainly talk to you, and we will probably talk to Kurt for hours and hours about this, and we could certainly talk to you for a lot, but we have actually a mantra, a philosophy that approaches how we build models as we work with districts. It's a very, very open process. And we have a question: how complex should a value-added model be? And our answer, at least our possible rule for us, is simpler is better unless it's wrong. Now, turns out that that seems really obvious and so on, but No Child Left Behind has started with the idea that simpler is better, and so we've been using the proficiency rate. Well, as I talked about before, that's wrong with respect to the idea of identifying school productivity. So simpler isn't always better. Simpler is better unless it's wrong, and so you need to worry about certain things as you build your value-added models. And we actually have a list appended to your notes of our dozen lead problems. And I'll just give you a sense for how it's important to take this seriously. But once you move into the idea that what you're trying to measure is the productivity of what a school's doing, it's obviously a very serious business. You're trying to get it right. You're trying to say, if I took a kid and moved him from one school to another, or if I took a policy and implemented it in the school, what's that causally going to do? Are we going to improve the student achievement of those kids? And so one of the issues that we deal with is the testing in Wisconsin's in November. So November to November growth cuts across fourth grade, November through May, and then into fifth grade, September, October, November. And so the first thing that we're forced to do in this state, first thing we're forced to do in Illinois, where they test in March, is build value-added models that split the growth into those two segments. If you ignore that, you get it wrong. And you particularly get it wrong for schools where there's lots of mobility from 4th to 5th grade and 5th to 6th. Now, there's some interesting grades where that mobility has special characteristics. 8th to 9th, 5th to 6th transition grades, where everybody just about is changing school. Now, that's not always the case. It's even more complicated because Milwaukee has K-5s in middle schools, but they also have K-8s. So there's some schools where there's a massive change in 5th grade. The K-5s, all the kids all leave, and some where there's not. So there's a case where we build in the complexity of looking at the growth over those segments. And that's why, although the right metaphor, the right simple way for thinking about what value add is think about gain. Value added takes gain and tweaks it, because November to November gain isn't exactly what you should look at. If you're an eighth grade teacher, the gain from 7th to 8th grade isn't really about what you did, because you only affected that September, October, November part. And so right now, if we were conditioned, we might be thinking, well, 8th grade, that's about, 8th grade test scores is about 8th grade. Even growth from 7th to 8th grade isn't mostly about 8th grade, because most of those months, the 6.5 months, were 7th grade. So we break it down into segments. And we have a whole list of other things that, what do you do about the kids that are retained in grade? Then they're not 4th to 5th, they're 4th to 4th. And so you want to get that right, otherwise you mess up the attribution. Because, of course, what we're trying to figure out is what did these policies, the instructional practices choices, the other things, how did they produce the achievement growth? So we want to make that link act tight and accurate. Let's go on to the next one, Ernie. Okay, I've already addressed some of this in that we've been working with Milwaukee over the last 10 years. They have been doing the standard value-added system for the last 6 years. This summer we're going to be rolling out our equity-oriented value-added, which actually looks and tries to find schools that not only are have higher productivity than others, but higher productivity for certain kinds of kids. And then can we trace that to policies? Are there schools that are much better with kids that are coming and going, where there's high turnover? What is it that they're doing so that if a kid goes there, that kid doesn't suffer as much from the switch from one curriculum to the next? That's very interesting. That's kind of a level two value added, the next level of what you might try to ask from your model. Next one, Ernie. Now, our work with Milwaukee has been interesting, and a number of districts, we've been talking with Kurt Art about this for the last couple of years. We began working with the Chicago Public Schools last year. Dallas now has joined into the network, and we're going to be working with them. And the feds have just asked us to write a proposal to evaluate, with actually a national experiment, what would happen if you took really effective teachers and put them in schools where there's lots of low-achieving kids. And so we wrote a proposal, and they said, that's good. We'd like you to write a fuller one. So that would be a $15 million study that would involve lots of districts, maybe Madison, and that would involve the chance to see whether what you're measuring really is, in fact, transferable, that this is a skill that can help other kids. So we're very, very, very committed to both getting it right, using the best possible science to be sure that we're producing something that is as important as a scientific-based estimate of school performance, school productivity. And also we're looking forward to working with other districts. And to the extent that we're able to contribute to Madison, that would be really enjoyable for us, because we're just located two blocks away. And it does seem like working in your own backyard is probably the most rewarding thing you can do. So I have other slides here that I can talk about, but maybe this is a good time for Kurt and Art and every other people to throw in comments or ask questions.
What kind of questions do you have? I really think and have thought for many, many years that this is really has tremendous potential for all aspects of and Rob certainly mentioned some of these, of all aspects of how we make decisions about instruction in the school district. And over the long run, will give us a tool that allows us to really, I think, control a majority of factors that affect kids' learning and measure a specific factor that we want to measure to determine a policy or instructional decision about. So I have a long history of looking at this. I actually had a team in Kansas City back in 1990 working on this, with the loss of federal desegregation dollars, I lost the team. But I really think that for instruction generally, this is the direction to go. I think it's this model is certainly, that Rob and his group have put together, is certainly the most sophisticated model that we've ever had in terms of really being able to control for a wide variety. When Rob talks about the characteristics of the student, that we measure a lot of things about students in our district. We're very fortunate that Kurt has built over all these years a very, very rich database. We know about as much about the characteristics of our kids as probably anybody in the country. And so that gives us access to being able to look at a lot of factors that affect children's learning that a lot of other school districts just don't have the data for. And our data goes back now, I guess, probably 10 or 12 years.
1990.
And so I think that gives us a leg up. And we've never really had a way to utilize that data in a policy-making way. So that's what I think is important. And I'm personally excited about the opportunity to participate. And it's always good to sit down with Bill Andrikopoulos in Milwaukee or others and say, okay, how are you using this? One of the things that I hope we've been able to do in Madison, we used to always have the opinion here that if we didn't invent it, it couldn't possibly be any good because we're so smart that we'd have thought for everybody else it was any good. Hopefully we've begun to understand there's 15,000 school districts in America and all of them are doing some things that we can all learn from. So from my standpoint, that's why I think it's important. And I think it'll be critically important for the board. I think it will give you access to information that you have wanted to know as a board about learning and about instruction that just hasn't been able to be there. And as a matter of fact, it's a shame Ruth isn't sitting here because a lot of the things that Ruth used to ask us to do that we just said we don't have any tools to do that with, I think over time this will give us the tools that we need.
So what are the tools then that we need to move into this type of analysis? And do we have them? What does it take to get them? I mean, I guess given that we're going to get a report on that this fall, maybe we have many of the tools.
Well, the tools, I truly believe here, tools really means the intellectual capacity that these folks, this team brings. I appreciate Art's flattery, but I don't know everything. And these folks know this stuff. And so I would say the tools, a critical part of the tools is truly the capacity that they bring to this sort of analysis. We've tried to learn some of it on our own, but it's can be kind of complicated. And so we are anxious to partner with them. I would just say this too. I wear this not just because, you know, it's this sort of thing. I truly believe that what we're needing to do is to partner in the Wisconsin idea sort of way. And that's what this project to me, in collaboration with the Department of Public Instruction, is really all about. We're trying to create some new knowledge that we can use to set policy, to evaluate programs, to help us direct resources as needed. So tools, it's the intellectual capacity for one. And the partnership, to me, is just an outstanding opportunity.
Yeah, I think we certainly have the statistical capability and those kind of things to do what we need to do here. As I mentioned, we have a very rich database on our students, and what we need as much as anything else is the capacity that we build working with Rob and just time.
Yeah.
You know, the time. And I mean time, longitudinal time, not the time to do the statistical analysis, but more than 1 year of data to get to the point where we're looking at three or 4 years of data on a school and looking at growth over that time, what's happened inside that school, to really get to the point where it will be at its most useful to us. I think we can certainly gain some things from just the first year of a baseline growth for everybody. But long term, being able to look at 3 or 4 years of data to make decisions with, which once we get to that point, then we will always have 3 or 4 years of rolling data. I think is as big, but in terms of the ability to do this work, I think we have people that can do it and have the database and those kind of things.
Let me ask this question, and Arlene has a question after that. One of the things we as a board have been trying to do for a number of years, and I know administration has been trying to do too, is to put some benchmarks to our strategic plan. Our strategic plan has a number of different elements in it, and one of the elements, actually the first one I think, is student achievement and rigorous curriculum. And the board, a number of years ago, set our goals for third grade reading, algebra at the ninth grade, 94% attendance. And I think there's a sense of the board that we may want to move to something more. And can this methodology be used to help us set different benchmarks for our strategic plan? And is that something that we could do relatively soon?
My sense is yes, very, very much so. I mean, one of the things that Rob mentioned earlier on was the ability, I mean, obviously you want to, I think one of the benchmarks for us needs to be that our schools are in fact helping students grow, and certainly there are benchmarks that can be set in terms of how much that ought to be in comparison to where students start and those kind of things. But I think also one of the things that Rob mentioned early on when he had the whole formula up there is looking at certain kinds of student characteristics, which can be certainly things such as, and I'm going to go off on one here that Rob made. Okay, I mean, and obviously when it is low-income students, how much is this school or the district contributing to low-income students in terms of growth? And why are we doing that? And what's working and what isn't at various places? But I think we can also look at the other end. We can look at the student who starts out high, the student who starts out with all of the things that you ought to have and scores very high on our measures. What kind of growth are we contributing to that student? Which is one of the issues that we face politically all the time about, are we doing something for our upper-end students? Right now the measure that we have is to be able to say, well, you know, we got more national merit finalists than anybody in the world, and that's not going down. And our ACT scores are very high. And so that isn't changing. But what we don't know is how much of that is the result of where the child started and the characteristics that they bring to the table, and how much of it did we do. This, I think, you can certainly control for factors that would allow us to look at the upper-end student in terms of what we're contributing to that student the same way we look at the student who is low-income. And I think we're limited only in terms of what characteristics that we measure is the only limit that we have, and then we can control for any of those. So I think that would lend itself very much to the board being able to set much more specific kinds of targets for specific parts of our district and specific types of children in our district, and move us toward what I believed we ought to be doing all the time, which is really and truly measuring individual students, because that's really what we're talking about here. We're really talking about the growth, the aggregate growth of individual kids, not the average of a class, but the aggregate growth of individual children, and then controlling for whatever factors you want. So I think, yes, much more sophisticated.
Arlene?
Thank you all very much for the handout and the presentation. I think it's very exciting and can be such a powerful tool for this district and something that we desperately need. I started to do some reading on value-added analyses. I didn't get very far just because I ran out of time. But, did see how districts use it for evaluating the effectiveness of programs, of staff, resource allocation, all the way through, which ties back to a question I have. I can see that as a district launches into this, staff getting maybe a little bit nervous or a little bit concerned that, oh my goodness, what is this going to mean? How will the numbers relate to the job that I do? Have you experienced that in Milwaukee or Chicago? How has the acceptance of the in-school staff been on a program like this?
Milwaukee reports started by reporting value added at the school level aggregate, provides the information by the grade level. There are some districts like Dallas who actually go right down to the teacher level and report. As you probably get closer and closer to home, there would be more concerns, concerns about it that you'd be using, you'd be doing it right, you'd be using it wisely. I think it's, in Milwaukee, but also in Chicago, they made a lot of effort to work with their stakeholders. In our Chicago value-added project, we actually have an advisory panel. We stress the idea that what we're doing with this is extremely open and transparent, that people know what's going on, people can comment on it. And so the national AFT, Chicago, the Chicago Teachers Union is a member of the AFT. Their national staff is very, very interested in value added because they think it brings some fairness to the table. As you get further and down the trail of No Child Left Behind, where you're saying some schools should be sending kids to others, you want to be sure that you're measuring it right. Although you might even question whether you should be attaching such stakes. But if you're going to be doing things like this, it's really important to be measuring it right. So I think there's a lot of interest among people who've in getting it right. So in the case of Chicago, we met with Mike Christian and I met with the Chicago Teachers Union and the National AFT for about 4.5 hours one day and just said, here's what we do. And they said, this is really interesting. We like the open approach. We don't like the black box approach where we don't have an idea about what's going on or that some anointed statistical wizard just says, trust me, you might be getting it right. But they very much like the open approach. And I know that Kurt and Art have stressed that that's like the number one thing they like about the way we proceed, that it's open and transparent. And so we had the nice result there that at the end of the meeting, the National AFT said, this is interesting. We think we can learn with this. We think we can help. And they actually joined our advisory panel. So their senior statistician is on our advisory panel and meets with us to work on it. So I think it's very important that you work with stakeholders. It's very important. It's best. My predilection would be towards modeling that's open. That you report. Mike just finished a 60-page report for Chicago that said you could run the model this way, but you could also run it these 8 other ways, and here's what the differences are in running it different ways, and here's how some thoughts you might bring to how you should think about it. I've always stressed with the districts I've worked with that it's almost as important to be able to speak about what you're doing and get a dialogue going than the numbers per se. This is launching a way of thinking that's about student growth. As Art said, it's about kids, and it's about what you can do to help them now. That's for some people, that's actually a different way of thinking. The growth is a different way of thinking for some. You can relate it to things. Some of the work we're doing is getting at the issue of what's the right balance between discipline in the classroom, so it's an orderly classroom. Obviously, we all want that. We for sure want safe. And learning in mathematics and achievement, time on task. And we've identified some schools where they've really mastered the order, but they've lost track of the goal of academic learning, the time on task, the learning math and reading achievement. And that's really, really helpful because they would have a theory of action in their minds that by keeping order, they've done what they need to do to be good educators. And they welcome the idea that there's additional information they can use to learn about whether it's possible to do better, because they all want to do better. Sometimes, I read the papers, I've not heard this kind of discussion in Madison, but I can speak to it in Milwaukee and Chicago. Sometimes there's a concern that kids can't learn. You can't have high test scores for those kids. They're too low, they can't learn. The value-added perspective, which can say, no, that's not true, and we have examples of schools and grades where there's tremendous learning, and we can point to certain things they're doing. It's no surprise that sort of time on task. There's a great story about a principal at Fritchie Middle School they were rated the number one in the Milwaukee school system in production and mathematics skills. And we came back with the next results on reading, and they were rated about average. So that principal went back, had a staff meeting, and said, let's brainstorm, let's think about why we're doing it. And they uncovered that in terms of time on task, they had been favoring one and maybe not spending enough time on the other. And they made adjustments. They did it as a team. And the principal didn't necessarily know all the answers. As a team, they figured out what to do, and they made some changes. And our results showed, you were asking about results, that they were able to raise their productivity in reading. Turns out that principal was Mr. Andrikopoulos, who then went on to become superintendent. He's an interesting guy to work with. Like Art, he's a guy who believes in data, thinks you can learn from data, that you can work with it in a collegial context and do some good. So, that's a nice story, very simple story that didn't even involve sort of deep investigation. A lot of the insight about how to get better came from the educators themselves, but the prompt was from was that, whoa, we're doing a lot better in math than we are in reading. Do we know why? We would hope that districts could develop analytic systems, data systems, systems where you collect information on instructional practice that would even be able to provide additional guidance. But lots of times just providing a prompt that says, well, we're in quadrant four here. Let's think hard about what our education plan looks like. Probably an education plan for a district, for a school that's doing not as well as others, might look differently than one that's doing very well and wants to preserve what it's doing well, but perhaps add to that. So,
We're supposed to wrap up at 6, and Maya has the next meeting, so I'm going to ask for, if she would mind, to let us go just 10 more minutes. But we will wrap up then 10 minutes. So let's, I think we have a couple of more questions, and Maya?
Sure. Thanks, Lori. This is either for Kurt or, maybe just Kurt. When you talk about the data rich, I just need clarification on what we're measuring, in the sense that how will this benefit the individual students and families to see how kids are indeed growing. I'm not sure if we're talking solely about socioeconomic status and factors that play before they get into the classroom, and my concern is, are we pre-testing kids? Are we going to be testing them on specific knowledge? The reason why I ask is that there's a lot of editorials in the paper about the NAEP test versus state tests, and that once No Child Left Behind was instituted, the state tests have typically been changed, and that one reason why is the states are reporting data that makes them look better than they actually are. And so how are we going to, first of all, what kind of data are we going to use that would specifically test content? And then, is it going to be the Wisconsin test? And then also, maybe someone on the panel knows that. So maybe I'll just stop there for a minute.
Sure. We indeed do plan on using the WKCE tests. Mm-hmm. We don't intend to create any new tests, purchase any other tests. for this purpose. We're going to ride what the state provides, and that's the WKCE. In terms of its rigor as it relates to a measure of student achievement, I think barring any expert opinion, that series of tests has been aligned to the state model academic standards pretty darn well, and I think is generally quite reflective of those standards. So we're comfortable with that. As far as other information that we have that can be used to help support these kinds of models, we do capture some information annually at registration having to do with things like parent level of education. Of course, all of which is voluntarily provided, and you know we make that very clear. Mm-hmm. And other information such as mobility, which of course just comes naturally through the student information system when you move one child enrollment-wise to another school and so on. There's, as what Art was referring to in terms of data rich, we do have a data warehouse environment which does include probably 5,000 different data elements that we've created, collected and created over the years, which is actually, I think when I mention it to these folks, they get real excited about it. So I'm hoping that that we can put it to good use for this purpose. As it relates to your question about how can it benefit individual students and the families that support those students, I would submit that just like you get a report every year that talks about was your child minimal or basic or proficient or advanced and what have you, how did they do relative to the standards on the standard summary for that. If you've had children in the district, you've seen these reports. We will now also be able to reflect on, at an individual student level, the growth they're making over time and have some meaning to that relative to what do we kind of expect in terms of growth from one grade level to another. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn on this, am I, Dr. Meyer?
No, but that's a very exciting thing to try to take this down and make it directly useful. I mean, for sure, parents and students benefit from knowing that their school's getting better because they're
right.
instituting programs,
right.
but the idea of bringing it down, that's actually not something that Milwaukee has done. You know, there's you pick your things, and it's...
Well, when we did our crude analysis years ago, we did something like that, and we were able to provide parents with something like that. So that would be something that we could do as well. And then, of course, As the discussion has gone on, I think you can clearly see how we can not only use the information from a school improvement planning perspective, but we can also use it from this program evaluation perspective. What kinds of things are we doing and implementing, and where are they having an effect, and what's the magnitude of that effect, and with which children is it having an effect? So it's a variety of those things that I would call into play. And I would, let me just underscore one more thing, I think, and this probably goes back to Ms. Silvera's question about how will people interpret this? Will it be somewhat challenging for them? I really take this back to this issue of equity and fairness. Today, we evaluate our school's productivity relative to how many kids were proficient and advanced from this year to next year to the next year, with different children going through the process. What this system allows you to do is to control for factors that we know affect student achievement coming in. And despite that, what kind of growth are we seeing with children at all ends of the spectrum? And to me, that's a much more equitable framework for accountability.
Well, let me get to this in a different way.
Okay, but we've got to our time, and
okay.
So very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's just a concern that I don't think Madison is Milwaukee, and Milwaukee has a lot of charter schools, and so they almost have individual paradigms of how they're going to teach kids. And what I'm more concerned for Madison is that I think all of our schools do a very good job. What I'm more concerned with is how we teach them in different curriculum, whether it's how we teach math, how we teach reading. I think the research shows that kids that have low socioeconomic means and so forth, that statistically they're getting off on a rough start. So I don't need that to be proven to me. But what I do want to see is how are we as a board going to be able to use it when Ms. Kubsa talks about, you know, the third grade reading or the algebra? How are we going to specifically test that so that I, as a board member, can say, okay, this is working or this isn't working, and what benchmark do we need to set the next time around? For instance, everyone knows, or a lot of people know, that in math, middle grade math, if you have people that have graduated with degrees in math, they're going to get students that are going to test well. So I want to know how we can achieve this stuff and present it to the community. So any feedback on that?
Do you want to?
Well, maybe I think that would be a good topic for a future meeting. So I think we should leave that there, because I think this is really, I really appreciate everyone coming and speaking tonight. This has been one of the most interesting discussions I've been at since I've been on the school board, and I think it's one of the most important discussions, because it really looks, is a fair and understandable way to really look at how we're doing and whether we're being successful with our kids and all our kids, and not just looking at the aggregate. So I really appreciate you coming and helping us tonight. And so I would like to ask the administration to put that this will be the topic of our next meeting also. And we will come up with questions and things that we'd like you to address, be more specific at that time. And maybe we'll work on, we'll take questions from the board on exactly what we'd like to see. But I just think it's such a valuable discussion that we'd like to expand maybe on some of the things. So thank you very, very much. Other business?